75% of Americans believe in UFOs. 30% of Americans believe UFOs are vehicles from other worlds. And 3% of Americans believe they have been abducted by aliens. That's over 8 million people. They're out there, aren't they?
Welcome to the UFO Files Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
Hello, everyone. This is Jerry Pippin, and welcome to our UFO show. Okay, now we're going to the phones now, and I believe this caller is from Connecticut. Is that right?
Yes, Jerry. This is Tommy from Connecticut. How are you doing tonight?
Pretty good. How's things with you?
Not too bad. Yeah, Jerry, my opinion on Mars is, you know, the investigation, you know, I'm an amateur ufologist, okay? I'm not a pro like you. But in all the stuff that I investigated, I truly 100% believe that we've been to Mars. I believe we have bases on Mars. I believe what Alfred Webb, Lamont Weber, or whatever, has to say. I believe Andy Bisaccio. And I think our government has a lot going on the planet that we don't know about.
Well, you know, Bisaccio and Weber, even they're saying that Obama was at Mars, on Mars at one time. Do you buy that?
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, I saw that, Barry Sotero, they called him. And you know what? I even believe that. And I'll tell you what, though. The only thing, I don't know if you saw, I used to be a fan of Richard Hoagland, but I don't know, have you seen what's been going on the last month?
Well, yeah, they've been doing a little disinformation on him, or maybe it is disinformation. I don't know. It's hard to believe.
Yeah, well,
I know what you're talking about. They're saying some pretty negative things about him.
Yeah, well, I used to be a fan of Richard's, and the thing that's got me, you know, a little down about the subject is they're giving him an opportunity to come back and talk, and he's not returning calls, and he will not face his accusations. So I'm starting to think now that it's got merit.
Well, things have a way of working out on the web. Didn't you call last week about thinking that the Phoenix Lights big triangle was a military?
Yep.
Yeah, I thought you were the same guy. I got something to run by with you on that.
Go ahead.
And if it was a secret military plane, and this happened 15 years ago, why haven't we seen it since then? I mean, why are they still having it secret? Are you saying it's part of this secret space navy that we have that's going back and forth to Mars and things like that?
Jerry, yes, I do. And I want to say one more thing. I've uncovered in the last 3 weeks, okay, online, getting a hold of, some radio shows like tonight, that we have a spacecraft, I don't know if you've heard of it, that goes to Mars. It's called the Minerva vehicle. And basically, this is an intersolar, interplanetary ship that takes off from Wright-Patterson and a base in California. And basically, it's part of a space fleet that we have that could get to Mars in an hour and a half. Now, I know somebody who works real secretive for Pratt & Whitney Aircraft. He's an aeronautical engineer. I ran into him about a month ago, and he knows, you know, we kid each other because he thinks I'm crazy. But I said to him, have you ever heard of the Minerva? As soon as I said to him the name, the Minerva, he got all quiet, all nervous, and he said he had to go. He runs out of the store on me. We're getting coffee at the Cumberland Farms. So just that response there, it's called the Minerva spacecraft. And I'll tell you, if you ever get a chance, look it up, but it's something that...
I've read a little bit about the Minerva, and I'm not saying, as I said to you last week, I'm not saying that these things don't exist because we don't know. But it baffles me why we would have all of these things that are state of the art and beyond 21st century stuff. And we're still using NASA in the old-fashioned way. It appears to me that if we're doing that, we're actually, as a government, committing negligent homicide. We kill those astronauts, and they wouldn't have had to die.
You know, that's the million-dollar question. That's what's got me baffled, Jerry, and I know a lot of other people baffled. I just do not understand it. But I got a question for you. When Cliff Stone comes on tonight, you're going to be talking with him. I don't know if you've heard of a guy named John Kettler. Have you heard of him?
Kettler?
Yeah.
No. I don't
think. Anyway, make a long he's been on with Kerry Cassidy at Camelot, and he claims to have off-world connections as well as high-end military alphabet agency.
Okay, yeah, I know. Okay, now I understand who you're talking about. Yeah, I've talked to Kerry about him.
Yeah, and he claims, you know, there was a couple instances about Venezuela. The Iran shipped a couple of nuclear missiles there, and the ETs bombed out and destroyed the base. Well, this past weekend there was a show on the radio, and they had another former whistleblower on, and I had called in and asked if they heard about a couple of these incidents. And they verified to me, yes, they have, and that those incidents were true. So I was just wondering if Clifford ever heard of these incidents that have been going on the last month, you know, with the sub disappearing, the Israeli sub in the Straits of Hormuz.
Yeah, I tell you what, I'm going to try to bring that up with Clifford, and if we get into about 30 minutes or so of the interview, and I haven't done it yet, call back in and bring it up.
Okay. Hey, thanks a lot, Jerry, and I hope your health is well.
Okay. Well, it's better.
Good. Glad to hear that.
Okay. Thank you very much. And we're getting ready now to contact Clifford Stone down in Roswell, or up in Roswell, according to where you are, where you're listening to the show, as we're heard around the world, and then some, I guess. Clifford Stone, how are you? This is Jerry Pippin.
You know, a lot of people say I'm a fraud, I'm a fake, I'm a liar. You know, there was a period of time that I went for 2 years and was real stressed out because of the things the military was doing to me.
Uh-huh.
And I've never talked about it. I've never went ahead and put any of the documents out there. Several people recently, as a result of my new book, actually got to see some of those documents. And as you've always been fair with me, so shall I be fair with you. To have 20 minutes to just read certain documents. Jerry, but I've had people in high places come and talk to me. Said, you know, all these people are hitting up on you. And because people, they believe the facts, but only if it meets with what they already believe. However, within the UFO field, they believe the facts only if it concurs with what they're saying about UFOs. A lot of people say I make a lot of money off this. I have 20 years of my taxes. I'll match my taxes with anybody in the UFO field and let them show me where I made money as opposed to what they made money. Some of my most famous distractors, UFOs aren't doing well right now, so they're writing books about other things. But the whole situation is, I was there. I done this.
Okay, let's talk a little bit right off the top here about your book. And this is not your first book, right?
No, sir. This is book number 3. And actually, there was a congressional report that I did on Operation Blue Fly and Project Moondust.
Yeah,
I did for Congress only, but.
And, you know, we've had you on personally down in Roswell where you live. When you were with this top secret Army, was it an Army unit or a mixed military unit or what?
No, the alphabet soup controlled it. A lot of people think I was just in a unit, sitting back, doing nothing, waiting for a UFO event to occur. It wasn't that way. The Army Security Agency started their own program with remote viewing. It was called Gondola Wish. Now, the intent was to have people who could do remote viewing for intelligence purposes. And they were going to post these people at core level. When it came to the interfacing with UFOs, they could not do this because people had to have ongoing contact with our visitors. or our visitors would not open up. Therefore, they had to find these people in the public sector. I had ongoing contact since I was 6 or 7 years old, maybe earlier than that, I guess, really don't know. But the end result was I tried to get into the military. I tried to go in the Air Force simply because my brother was in there and I wanted to follow in his footsteps. I was rejected for military service, and 6 months later I got a notice from my draft board saying they want to reevaluate me, at which time I was given the opportunity, if I wished to go into the military, I could do it. Well, at that time, you know, people were more patriotic. It was God, country, mom's apple pie. And I said, yes, I want to go in. I feel that I have an obligation. Because at that time, I believed my country could do no wrong. There was a Vietnam War going on. And I got in. After basic, I went to AIT. At AIT, I started to get exposure to things that I knew I shouldn't be seeing. Or at least I thought I shouldn't be seeing. But I was advised it wasn't showing me anything I shouldn't see. And I found myself being drawn in to UFO investigations on an official, unofficial basis. So wherever I was assigned, if they had a UFO crash, and particularly if there were entities, not all the time, but most of the time if there were entities involved, then I was called in because they needed me to do the interfacing.
So you were basically kind of on call?
Yes, sir.
And did the people in your regular unit know you did this sort of thing?
The people in my regular unit knew I did strange things. I have a 7-page letter from a friend of mine who only knew me for 4 months while I was stationed in Germany. And he did a review of my second book, the one that came out in 97. He knew that when the subject of UFOs came up, I shied away from it. He also knew that I got documents from various government agencies dealing with UFOs. He saw pictures that no one else has ever seen. He saw documents no one else has ever seen. But he even asked me, he said, you know, you're not a normal soldier. What are you doing here? Normal soldiers don't go ahead and carry a briefcase full of UFO material. Will I ever see any of this? Then he said, you know, don't tell me. I don't want to know. But he actually did that in an interview, and that came out, I think the letter is dated 2004. But I'm going to send you a copy of that also, because that needs to be posted up there. And he knew that there were times they sent me out hoping something would happen to me till I didn't return. Because I only had a 70% reliability of never talking. And that 70% was based on emotions that I had as far as being concerned about what we were doing to other people. Forgive me, it's going to be hard to talk tonight, but Jerry, I care about, you know, stepping on toes, things of this sort, but what's more important, stepping on toes or telling the truth? People in key positions come here and talk to me about what I'm doing now because of that book that came out. And I think you know me. I don't promote myself. I really don't. If it wasn't for Paula Harris, that book would have never came out. But the whole situation is that there are still people being hurt. And the message isn't getting out, I don't think, about what's really going on. But it's clouded, even within the UFO field, because there's a lot of stuff coming out that isn't true. And some of the people in the UFO field are putting it out. And the truth is the most important thing. The U.S. government, as it was explained to me, they could come out and tell the truth. If they came out and told the truth, there would be people who would think they were still lying, simply because a lot of other people who aren't telling the facts as they are within the UFO field aren't telling the facts as what the government really does know, when they knew it, and what is really going on behind the scenes. They're not going to invade us. We'd make very lousy slaves.
I was talking to Paula Harris about you, Clifford, and she said that sent me an interesting quote that you basically felt that they were good extraterrestrials, right? And if it was all negative, you wouldn't be wasting your time. I'm paraphrasing, but...
Absolutely. I mean, what good does it do? If I knew the world was going to end tomorrow, what good would it do me, our humanity, to go ahead and say, hey, the world's going to end tomorrow, nothing you can do about it. Guess what you should know? We have people that before December 21st, 2012, will kill themselves because they believe it's the end of time. On December 22nd of this year, I plan to go fishing. I haven't went fishing for over 20 years. And there's a good site. Go on the NASA site and go to December 21st, 2012, just another day. They go over the situation. The Mayan calendar, where it refers to it ending December 21st, 2012, all it means is it's an end of an era, pretty much like December 31st of any year means for us. Now, whether the new era that begins is good or bad depends on what we've done up to that point.
Now, when we talk about your experiences, did I understand you correctly that you were with the National Security Agency itself, or...
Not with itself. I was asked to go to the school. That school.
I mean, did they send you up there for did they send you up there to Boston or wherever for TDY or something? Or
no, they could never get me to go to school.
Uh huh.
They gave me a security clearance out of basic. They gave me a secret clearance. And a lot of people, a secret clearance doesn't mean anything, but oh yes, it does. That right there is the foundation to build on. So when they needed me. Let's say that the information was top secret SCI. On a one-time basis, they'd give me a top secret SCI clearance based on that secret clearance. But the problem is, when I was utilized many, many, many times, it would go ahead, be top secret, and many times top secret SCI, which SCI stands for Sensitive Compartmented Information.
Now, when we talk about this top secret group, that were any of these other people in the same unit as you, or did you guys just did you jump on an airplane and fly someplace, or how did that work?
I'd get a knock at the door, and I'd be told the general sends his regards, the Basco. I had a bag; we called it a B-50 bag. It had all my equipment, 3 changes of uniform, a 45 with 2 claps of vinyl, and I'd grab that, and I'd leave. My family had no idea what I was doing. The kids, they resented it, because many times Daddy would be away from things that they felt Daddy should be there for. But what I was doing, I could never tell the family.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife knew a little because it happened in Vietnam. My wife's Vietnamese. So they always knew where to find me. So when it happened in Vietnam, she saw it happen. I had some people who were involved who would come over to our little villa, and we would discuss these things. So my wife wasn't dumb or stupid. She could understand English enough to where she would listen in on the conversations. So she knew some of the things that was going on. When I had a person that came here for lack of a better term, I'll say he came from the Pentagon. He went ahead. He stayed here 2 days and two nights, left on the third day. And we went over stuff. And she fixed him breakfast the day he was leaving. And she gave him some Christmas bulbs. And she said, you know, I don't know what my husband does, but I know he gets strange visitors. Who are you? And he told her, well, your husband was involved in a certain program, and we believe he knows more than what he's even telling us. So I'm here to try to pick his brain, so to speak, and I'd like to know what's going on as far as his feelings on certain subjects. That's the best I can say. Well, she knew it involved UFOs. So, with the Christmas ornaments, he went ahead and told her, I can promise you this, this Christmas, these ornaments will be on the Christmas tree in front of the White House. So, he took those, but he also did something that no one else has ever done. He showed her his credentials. And this person was a very high-ranking officer within the Office of Naval Intelligence. And I can tell you right now, the Office of Naval Intelligence is very, very much involved. The real files have never been released. Everybody thought it was Blue Book. Blue Book was not the one that really investigated. Early on in UFO history, they had the OSI that really did investigations. Now, when they sent these investigations of the really good cases to Wright-Patterson, they never made it to Blue Book, even though Air Force Regulation 200-2 makes it appear that way. It didn't go there. It went to the Office of Air Force Intelligence. They went ahead and did behind-the-scenes investigations. Now, the case was, and I better qualify this by saying most of the times, if they were heavily publicized, then they did a file in Blue Book, but not all the times. A good case was one that happened November 30th, 1954. They got reports of explosions in the air and people reporting UFO crash, or reporting airplanes crashing. OSI investigated this. Now, at the air base, which I think was Maxwell Air Force Base, there was an object that went through the roof of a house, hit a table, bounced off, and hit the woman, who was the occupant of the house, in the stomach. It bruised her stomach, but did not burn her. The Air Force, in the report, tried to go ahead and downplay it as a meteor. Her husband even got a lawyer to try to sue to get the meteor back. Well, the debris was never returned to them, even with the lawyer. The story is well known. It even appeared in history books, because I remember reading it when I was in about the seventh grade. The only woman in history, a Mrs. Hodges, that survived a direct hit with a meteor. Well, had it been a meteor, it wouldn't have just bruised her. By the way, the debris weighed about 9 pounds. It wouldn't have bounced off the table. It went through the table, through the floor, and made a crater in the earth underneath the floor. That didn't happen. The Air Force dispatched a helicopter from the Air Rescue Squadron from Maxwell Air Force Base, picked up the object, and immediately had it flown back to Wright-Patterson for examination and evaluation. What they found out ends there, because now it goes to something called Air Force Continental Intelligence Command. And those reports, the Air Force's Intelligence Command, have never, ever been released. And I can prove they had documents that were never, ever part of Blue Book. The Boehner Memo itself made it clear those cases that could involve matters of national security are not, nor were they ever meant to be, part of Project Blue Book. Therefore, we can do away with Project Blue Book without harming the intelligence requirements, period, which is very true.
Was that one of your first cases that you investigated back in 1954, or
no,
did you start earlier?
Coming out, I've gotten some calls. I never even thought about looking for these records. And as a result of them, of that book coming out, I got several very interesting calls. I didn't even know that it was Gondola Wish that I refused to go to. But I have documentation now to show that ASA had their own remote viewing program outside of Stargate, which was called Gondola Wish. That was a code name for it. And I can prove this. When you come here, my door is always open. Maybe you need to come over to my house and go through some of my documents. But this stuff here is very, very true. They did have a program all their own. And even with Stargate, they had some of the remote viewers try to investigate, try to remote view some of the most famous cases within UFOs, to include Bentwaters. The Random Forest, December 1980.
Hey, have you been? Do you do remote viewing yourself, or have you ever done it?
I've done it, but not for the military.
Tried it after you retired.
Yeah, when I first got started in this, I thought, okay, it's going to be fun. It was December. It was 1969. I truly felt that, and I was told, by December, the end of the year, the truth would be out on UFOs. And, of course, I was thinking Condon Committee report. Well, the Condon Committee report came out, and the truth was not in there. But even the Condon Committee report had a case which clearly showed it should have been in Blue Book, but it wasn't there. Lacey 17, November 1957, an RB-47 carrying, I think, 9 crew members tracked a UFO and even a visual observation of the UFO across 4 states. When they went to look for it, because some of the crew members wrote to the Condon Committee and said, we had this situation. Well, it wasn't in Blue Book. But now, where was it? It was in Air Force Intelligence. Then you have several cases that were released in the NSA files. Once again, not in Blue Book, because they were classified top secret SCI that are very good UFO cases. And most people get the files, do a cursory look. I do more than that. I read them and I study them. So there are many, many files that are out there that are even available to the public, but they don't know where to look. And right now I have something about like 30 cases dealing with recoveries that are raw data, but begs to be answered, which Air Force Intelligence has the records on, but have yet to release. And I understand why. It would prove we're not alone in the universe.
Now, when you started in the, for lack of a better term, UFO business while in the military, do you remember your first case?
Oh, yes, sir. The first case was at Indiantown Gap, Pennsylvania. Forgive me, I'm a little nervous tonight because I'm talking like I've never talked before.
And how did you get involved in that? They called you and you went up there?
We were at a field training exercise right there at Indiantown Gap. The field training exercise dealt with, I was with the 36th Civil Affairs, part of 96th Civil Affairs Group out of Fort Lee, Virginia. And it dealt with, there was a conflict between us and Cuba. We took Cuba over. Now we were setting up a military government to turn it over to the civilian government. So while we were there doing this, there was a call coming in that they had an airplane that crashed. The A-team, you have A-team, B-team. A-team has to arrive there within 2 hours. B-team is a backup team, and we were the backup team. They already had an A-team already on site. So they told me to go ahead, pack up all of my ready NBC equipment and the COMO equipment, and they'd have somebody else replace me. And I was to join a convoy, which was three Jeeps and I think four deuce and a half, and I drove one of the deuce and a half, to go to this location where this alleged plane went down. Now, we were told it was probably a Soviet aircraft, so don't worry about the configuration, because it was an unconventional configuration for an aircraft, which it was like a hill shape of a shoe. And it was embedded in the ground. When I got there, they had the lights around where the craft appeared to go in at about a 45-degree angle, 30 to 45-degree. And I was directed to take a Geiger counter and read back the readings we were getting off of it. So I got my APD-27, which is a surface Geiger counter, and started to move towards the craft. And every two or three steps, I'd read back what I was getting on the Geiger counter. It got marginally a little higher than what background radiation should be, but not to the point where it would be dangerous. Then when I got to the top, the crest of the berm where the craft was down, I got to look in. On the side of the canopy, there was like a kidney-shaped door that was open, and one of the ETs, obviously dead, was laying outside of the craft. And I went ahead and said, I need an officer up here. And the guy I always called the colonel, he told me, just tell us what you see, son. I said, no, sir, you don't understand. I need an officer up here. And he, no. It's okay. Tell us what you see. And I said, sir, I need an officer up here. This isn't a Soviet craft. This craft didn't originate any place on this planet. I need an officer. I need an officer up here now. And he told me, okay, come on back down. Now, when I got back down, he went ahead, had me go back in the deuce and a half, and told me I was to stay in there. And we had a canopy over it, so, you know, I wasn't supposed to see out. But this was still dark, except for the light alls. I could see perfect inside the crater because they had light alls all the way around it. These are generator high-power lights shining down into the crater. So I got back in there, and they ran some telephone lines to my 312 that was in the back of my deuce and a half, which 312 were the phones, and the SP-22, that was a switchboard. It was for field telephones. So I stayed back there. I looked out one time, seeing them lift the craft out with a crane, putting it on back of a lowboy, which is a flatbed tractor trailer. And where they took it to, I have no idea. What happened to bodies, I have no idea. But I know that there were bodies, that that wasn't the only body there.
How many bodies do you figure there were there?
I think there were five. Mm-hmm. And the reason I think there were five, the craft that I saw has been reported many, many times. And in the literature, there's always been three to five bodies. And I think in this particular incident, there were five.
And these were they human-like, or were they like little grays, or what?
No, they were typical grays. Mm-hmm. From what I saw, I just saw it from...
And you had no doubt they were dead?
No doubt that they were dead.
What do you think causes these crashes?
I'm sorry?
What do you think causes these UFO crashes? There have been quite a few.
I don't think there's been that quite a few. I think that there's a whole lot that's in UFO literature, but I think a lot of them are myths. And the reason I state that, UFO crashes per se are very, very rare. For example, here in Roswell, people say this brought it down, that brought it down. Well, what brought it down was what we called Project Diana. Project Diana was a Navy project. It dealt with a high-resolution proglimating radar. It interfered with their guidance system. At first, they thought it may be a weapon system directed toward them, because I'm of the firm belief there were actually two crashes. The one that we found at Roswell Army Airfield was involved in was an incident in which they were not aware that we'd already recovered the first one. Now, people at Fort Bliss were aware because they were involved. So, therefore, the people at Roswell didn't want to give any indication they were trying to cover up anything, so they blew security. They went ahead and talked about recovering a crashed disk, but didn't want to say anything more than that until after they found out exactly what they did have. And, of course, then the Pentagon would say something. So with that being out now, they had to do damage control. That means releasing a cover story. Well, no one here obviously could identify the debris. And they had hundreds of people who could identify a weather balloon or even a Project Mogul. So what they did, they sent it to 8th Air Force Headquarters at Dallas-Fort Worth. General Blanchard is out there, and he goes ahead, calls over his weather person, who looks at it and laughs. It's nothing more than a weather balloon with a rolling radar target attached to it. What's the mystery? Well, a half hour after the news conference, mystery solved, the debris is flown to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. The FBI has advised that it's being sent to Wright-Patterson. And the message goes out approximately 1.5 hours after the news conference telling J. Edgar Hoover that the object appears to be a weather balloon with a Rowland target device attached to it. However, conversation between 8th Air Force Headquarters there at Dallas-Fort Worth, the ones who said it was a weather balloon, and Wright-Patterson does not bear out that belief. And people miss that in the telex, the one-page telex, the only document that surfaced dealing with Roswell. And the whole situation, that document would have a follow-on document stating, yep, there was a weather balloon with a Rowland target. It's not there. Now, a lot of people go ahead and make a big deal about when the Army Air Corps at the time asked the FBI to go ahead and look into the case of UFOs, particularly when there's crash retrievals. J. Edgar Hoover did a handwritten note, and he stated he would do it. However, as in the L.A. case, which a lot of people want to say is SW for Southwestern, they refused to let them even have the object for a cursory look. Well, with Roswell, they had full access. But there is a case that happens 2 days after Roswell, and it is in Louisiana. Obviously a hoax. Obviously man-made. Wouldn't survive in outer space. And the Army intelligence refused to let the FBI look at it, even for a cursory look. He's referring to the Louisiana case, period. And all this takes place in less than 8 days. And I have where it's even typed out, L.A. But now, why is it, here it is, they have a case, obviously a hoax. They're refusing to let the FBI even look at it until they get permission from higher headquarters. Real simple to explain that. Roswell was a real event. It involved an extraterrestrial craft, complete with bodies. Immediately, a classified message went out stating that it's a matter of national security should you come into contact with any debris dealing with UFOs. Any debris means just that. Even if it's obviously a hoax, you don't release it. Well, Hoover was very upset that they couldn't see this thing that went down in Louisiana. So he makes note of that. He was very zealous. He wanted to be in on everything. So that's why we have the ELA there. And it really was the Louisiana case. The Army intelligence came in, oh, well, we don't know why they did that. We'll clarify this immediately. And it was clarified. If it's obviously a hoax, let the FBI look at it. It means nothing. The FBI was involved in several other cases that OSI was involved in, which involved recoveries. But once again, they were very low-key, as was the OSI, because as soon as they got it, they turned it over by 1953 to the 4602nd, who flew it back to Wright-Patterson, not the Blue Book, but to the laboratories there to do the evaluation to ascertain what it wasn't, leaving, you know, the door open as to the possibilities of what it was. And all of that was controlled by Air Force intelligence. At the time, early in the 1950s, it was the United States Air Force Continental Intelligence Command. And I can prove this. I have the documents.
Clifford, why don't we talk about your new book for a moment, and then I'm going to go to the phones and take some phone calls for you. And I got two or three. Well, I got a bunch of messages from chat room, and if you want to send me an email at jerry@jerrypippin.com, we'll ask Clifford Stone the questions. Our telephone number is 888-919-2355. That's toll free, 888-919-2355. Tell me about this new book. It's Paula's very high on it. You mentioned her earlier, Paula Harris.
Paula was a go-getter. Paula would not put words into my mouth. But she, like my granddaughter, felt I was holding things back, which I, even to this day, I hold things back. But she wanted to get the full story. So the book actually is a series of interviews done between Paula and myself. And it tells my life story, per se, as it involves being involved with UFOs, even on an official, unofficial level. And there's documentation in there that relates primarily to the 2 years that I went through a living hell because I decided to come public while I was still in the military. A lot of people aren't aware of that. But I came public while I was still in the military, and the military didn't like it. But I
you still getting your retirement benefits and everything, right?
Oh yes, oh yes.
So they haven't been as mean as they could be, or have they?
Actually, the reason I guess I'm a little upset tonight and talking the way I'm talking is because I had people come here in high places to talk to me about. And the key message is this. Because of the noise in the UFO field, if they were to tell the truth and even ascertain the fact that they were interplanetary, or the possibility could be it's somewhere interplanetary, people wouldn't believe it because of the noise in the UFO field. And I don't know how to fix that.
Yeah.
If I tell the truth, I'm going to be ostracized from the UFO field. But you know what? If that's the case, so be it. Which is more important, to go ahead and come out with the truth, or to go ahead and worry about stepping on toes?
And the name of the book is what now?
It's called Eyes Only, The Clifford Stone Story, and the Story of Crashed UFO Retrievals.
And that's available
at Amazon.com.
Okay. Let's go to some of these questions in the chat room. First person here wanted to know, did I understand Clifford right that the Army already knew he had ET contact?
Yes, they do, only I'm not sure I understand the question. The question is, when did we know it? And the answer to that is during the Second World War. And we found out about that, to the best of my knowledge, in the Pacific as the actions of General MacArthur.
And so they just actually made use of your experience already, right? In other words, that's kind of how you got involved with it. You said you got a top secret clearance right out of basic, which is pretty good.
Well, secret, which they could build on.
Mm-hmm.
And they never even told me I had a secret. When I'd try to file for a clearance, I was always discouraged, even though I knew it was important in order to get promotions. It was, no, if you do, you can't talk about UFOs anymore. Well, you know, excuse me? What are we talking about here? But no, I tried on several occasions to file for a security clearance. Anybody that knows about a security clearance knows every 5 years you have to renew that. I never had to renew it. It was based on a FBI INAC up on my entry in basic, and it followed me throughout my 22 and a half years military service. They tried to pull it one time, and that's when I was assigned to the New Mexico Military Institute because I didn't need a security clearance.
Is that how you ended up in Roswell? Being assigned there to that school?
Bill Moore wrote a book, and that book was about to come out. They moved me here and wanted me to be involved with part of the officially sanctioned deception program. Now, I didn't know that at the time because I was sitting back, why are they sending me to Roswell? Because I didn't know of any installation here. Roswell Air Force Base, Walker Air Force Base, closed in March 1967. They asked that I go ahead and volunteer for the multinational Sinai peacekeeping force, which I did. And they came back and said, oh, you've only been back in the States 2 years, which was a laugh, and haven't been there long enough to be transferred overseas again. I know people that were 8 months and transferred back overseas. But they were sending me here. Now, the PMS, within an ROTC assignment, they're sent 4 or 5 people, complete with pictures, for them to decide who they want. Well, there aren't any pictures of me in my file, in my official fish, and I have the fish to prove this. The full-length photographs, which are required by regulation to be there, they never put them in there. He was told, I'm coming, nothing you could do about it. Just accept it. So I showed up, and everybody thought, gee, this is strange. Normally, we get word as to who they'd like to send here, and we choose. In your case, that wasn't the case. And anybody that knows anything about ROTC knows back in the 80s, that's the way it was done. So, no, I was sent here. Then when I got here, immediately, I never bought Charles Moore's book. But one was placed in my car, and I was told to go ahead and read it. Well, then stuff started coming out. I already knew about Paul Benowitz, but Paul Benowitz was still rocking the boat. Now, there was a lot of things to discredit Paul Benowitz, but the necessity to discredit Paul Benowitz was there simply because they needed to go ahead and cloud the truth of what he was really involved in. There was an Air Force colonel that was involved with law enforcement, whom I called. He knew I was still in the military. He suspected I was involved with UFO investigations covertly. So he said, I can't talk to you here in the office. I will call you at your home tonight. So he called me. And I said, okay, what do you think about Paul Venowitz? And he said, all I can say, and this is almost a direct quote, is that he's involved investigating something that is not natural. Well, I knew immediately what he meant. So there were things going on. By virtue of working at Job Corps, I got to meet a lot of kids from the area that was dear and close to his heart, who told me about many, many things that happened there, and even some of their parents even told me. And, of course, we're talking about Native Americans because it is on a reservation. And short of being invited to visit some of those places, you don't visit them. Now, to the extent of what he was hitting up on, no. Now, was OSI and Air Force Intelligence was very involved trying to make this guy look crazy, if not drive him crazy. And I hate to say it, but because the actions of the U.S. intelligence community on part of the Air Force, this man wound up dying. And after that, that was no longer acceptable to me.
Okay, I got several questions here that I want to go over in a minute, but you mentioned Paul Venowitz. What do you make of the Dulce legend?
It depends on what aspect. The soldiers being killed never happened.
Mm-hmm.
Something crashing there? Yep, sure did. Some strange events occurring there over a period of months? Absolutely. Air Force aware of it? Very much so. Covertly, because it was on Native American soil, they had to be very quiet in what they did. Even some of the people even saw some occupants. They referred to them as skinwalkers.
We're talking with Clifford Stone, and our telephone lines are open now at 888-919-2355. That's toll-free if you have a question for Clifford Stone. 888-919-2355. We had a caller and we lost him, but maybe they'll call back. I got four or five different versions of this in the chat room, and also I got an email at jerry@jerrypippin.com. They wanted to ask you, what was the size of the crafts that you saw, UFOs? In other words, were they big, little, or what? Or different sizes?
Some were small, some was big, and he's probably heard me talk about the one that was about 30, 35 foot in diameter. That was on the outside. We went inside, and I had one of the guys. We already could tell that something was wrong because it looked much bigger inside than the outside.
Really?
We had a tape measure that was 125 feet, I believe it was. I had one of my colleagues hold it against one wall, and I walked across to the other side, and we ran out of tape. And the question is, gee, it's only 30, 35 foot in diameter, what's all this about? Well, when it comes to their craft, you can't really think about the size on the outside. And some craft have been very, very small. When people say that they see craft that are 2, 2.5, 3 foot in diameter, people think, oh, that's a toilet seat flung into the air, or that's a trash can lid that's thrown in the air to fool the people. Uh-uh. Some of the craft are that small. But that does not necessarily mean that the occupants are that small. And in some cases, it does. There are some occupants that were about the size of, say, a camel soup can.
But okay, Clifford, do we have a caller from Connecticut, I think, here? Are you there, caller?
Yeah, how you doing tonight, Clifford?
Fine. You're on the air with Clifford Stone.
Okay, first of all, I want to say, Clifford, I appreciate what you're doing, and I believe you. That's number one. Number two, I'm going to run a couple things by you, and then I'm going to hang up, and hopefully you could comment on them. Number one, Clifford, have you ever heard of a guy named John Kettler? He's basically He was in the intelligence community, worked for Lockheed or one of those big air companies. And basically, he's got a lot of connections in the alphabet industry, and he also claims to have off-world contacts. And basically, in the last month, he's been on a few shows saying that Iran has smuggled missiles to Venezuela, and the ETs, the good ETs, have, you know, destroyed the missile silos in Venezuela, and they also made a submarine disappear, an Israeli submarine disappear in the Straits of Hormuz. That's number one. Number two, have you ever heard of Mark Richards? His wife, Joanne Richards or Judy Richards, runs some kind of agency out of Texas, and basically she claims he was in a space fleet that fought and took down ET crafts. And I'll hang up and listen to your comment.
What do you think, Clifford?
Thank you for your call, sir, and thank you for your support and belief. Trust me, it's hard what I do, and I just feel I need to do it. And I feel I have to do it. No matter what happens to me, I got to help other people. But, yes, I've heard of both people he names. I can't speak for the validity of what they say, but I can state this. They do have the ability to neutralize missiles. They do have the ability to go ahead and take an entire submarine. However, they will not harm people. There's been several times I've always said, because I was told, that not all contact would be friendly. They have rogue elements, just like we do. Like, you know, what the cartel does is not acceptable to civilized society. But within their small group, it is perfectly acceptable within their paradigm. So with the rogue groups out there, they sometimes do things that the majority totally disagree with. And they will try to stop that. There's been three occasions when I've had contact with negative entities, and all three times I had aid. The abductions, they seem like they're bad things. They aren't really bad things. We've done horrible things to ourselves in the last 20, our last 70 years. We still continue to do that, and this is simply the greed of man. And like a lot of people think, they're going to kill off 80% of the population. They're going to do this and going to do that. I can tell you right now, once again, that we would make very lousy slaves, even 20% of us that might be left, if they were to try to knock off 80%. Also, thanks to Kabler, and this can be verified by the NASA website, we have discovered over 2,000 planets out there, many of which have actually have water on them. But all the minerals we have on this planet, all those uninhabited planets that we perceive to be uninhabited, are out there. They would know which ones truly were. They could go ahead and mine for the minerals from those planets. They could get the water from the water planets. They don't need us. They're very humble. Do they have the means to defend themselves? Yes, they do. Are they out to destroy us? No, they're not. They're very concerned about our actions. And if we become spacefarers, which ultimately we're going to do, ultimately we're going to become interstellar travelers visiting other star systems. And I've said this many times, we first have to grow spiritually, meaning that we have respect for all life, even that life that doesn't, you know, look the same as us. Right now, if you had E.T. walk down a populated city, he'd be killed. He or she, I should say, would be killed simply because out of our ignorance and fear, we would see something alien, and as surely as people have fears of spiders, where the first reaction is to squash it, so it is with our visitors. Now, the ones that look like us, that's a different story. But even they have to be careful because they know things. They can do things that normal man can't do.
Different types of ETs are there? You mentioned the grays and then the ones that look like us. Are there others?
There are actually seven types of grays. There are three that are prominent. They call them type 1, type 2, type 3. There are several that look as human as us, but there are certain features like their height. Sometimes they look like they have pink eye, but they try to go ahead and camouflage that. And, of course, I hate to say this, but a lot of times, yeah, they have blonde hair. But a lot of times they'll dye their hair so it'll fit in and people won't really notice. They have compassion, and that's sometimes their most vulnerable aspect. There was a case in Texas where they got hit with a hurricane. This was back in the 70s. There was a family there. The family did not originate on this planet, but they fit in. They had jobs. They were normal and everything. Most of the places were destroyed around where this young man lived with his family. He befriended a young lady. And with her house being destroyed and everything, he thought he'd cheer her up by letting her see their flying saucer in the garage, or in the barn. That very night, the family was moved in unmarked blue vans and trucks, was moved to to another location, non-disclosed. Actually, it was California where they moved them to. And nothing was there the next day. But, of course, that young lady suffered because she told the story. I know it to be true because I was told the story by one of the intelligence officers who was there and who observed the whole thing. And he was telling me this simply because he was a person in SPO. When I went up, I need a security clearance. And he, no, you don't. You get a security clearance, you can never talk again. Well, he was half telling the truth. He already knew I had a security clearance. He knew if I pursued it, I'd find that out. And it wasn't until they put me through the living hell here at Roswell at Mimi that I found out that I had the security clearance for over 17 years. And I thought, hey, what's going on here?
Plug that book one more time. The name of it is?
It's entitled Eyes Only, the Clifford Stone Story, and the story of crashed UFO retrievals.
Okay, thanks very much, Clifford Stone. We'll do another show shortly, and you send those documents to me, and we'll put them right up, and we'll let everybody know about it. And we'll do another show shortly. Thanks very much.
Hey, friends, this is George Norrie. Don't miss this year's UFO Paranormal Summit in Sacramento, California, on June 16th and 17th at the beautiful Crown Plaza Hotel. Come see Stanton Friedman, Project Camelot's Carrie Cassidy, Area 51 legend Norio Hayakawa, Scotty Roberts and Anthony F. Sanchez, critically acclaimed author of the book UFO Highway, and many more of your favorite paranormal and UFO researchers. The UFO Paranormal Summit is bringing together the best minds in paranormal investigative, crypto hunting, and UFO alien hunting fields. For the strange, mysterious, and frightening, nothing will be left unanswered. Happening June 16th and 17th in Sacramento. Go to sacufocon.com, that's sacufocon.com, for more information. Or type UFO Paranormal Summit in your very favorite search engine or Facebook, and you can find it that way. sacufocon.com.